My name is Paola Tester. I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another project by Anthony Gormley in Trafalgar Square. The date is the 3rd of September 2009 and the time is 12:20 p.m. Please could you tell me your name, your age and where you're from?
I'm Sue Mason, I'm 46 and I'm from Northwich in Cheshire.
And have you travelled to London especially today?
I have. Yeah, came down on the train this morning, got the 7:30 train to Stockport and then down on the fast train. And then I braved the underground to get here. Don't like the underground.
How was that?
It was all right because it wasn't the rush hour. I don't like undergrounds, certainly not on my own. But I got here.
And arriving in the square today and seeing the plinth in action, has it been how you imagined it?
It's high up and the fountains are noisy, so I'm hoping that my little PA will be loud enough that people will be able to hear me. But I've got a good cheering group of about 20 coming, so because lots of my friends work in London, so they've taken their lunchtime in order to come and see me make an idiot of myself on a plinth somewhere.
Wonderful. So who's here with you today, do you know?
Well, Julie's just come in with me, and there should be Alison and probably... there are lots of science fiction fans. I'm a science fiction fan, and so there will be... They're not the sort of science fiction fans that dress up in costumes. They're the sort of science fiction fans that read books. But a lot of them work in London, so as I say, they've all come along to say hi. And they've all gone for lunch without me, which is very nice of them. They had a 12 o'clock lunch booking, and they've gone for that while I'm here with you. So I know my friends are.
And where did your interest in science fiction come from? Books.
I read fantasy when I was a kid, and then my science teacher said, "Oh, you'll enjoy this," and gave me a pile of about 15 Isaac Asimov and Heinlein, all the classics, and expected them back a week later. So I learnt to read fast and I learnt to read SF. And I've been involved with science fiction fandom since 1982 and involved with running conventions, and I do emceeing at fancy dress competitions for them. So I stand in front of 3,000 people and talk for 4 hours while the fancy dress contestants get themselves ready. And then I announce them and then they come on. So this sort of thing is not difficult to me. I'm not waiting for somebody else to get their act together. I can actually just tell the little stories that I always tell. My friends here today will have heard them all before, but the rest of London hasn't, and the interwebs, so...
Is that what you'll be doing on?
Yes, I will be telling stories, anecdotes about my grandfather and the cat and the car and various things that amuse me in life. The original idea was I was going to belly dance and give a belly dance lesson, and then I mapped out the space and discovered that I'd probably be the first plinther to fall off if I tried that. So I decided maybe I didn't want to be the first plinther on the evening news for falling off, so I'd find something that was a little more static. And most of the things I do aren't very visual. I am an artist, but my art tends to be done with a hot pyrography pen on wood and is usually about 6 inches by 4 inches. So it's not very big, and you can't do things like that up on a plinth. So the art was out. Most of the other things I do in life I do with an iBook sat on my lap on the internet, which again is very nice. Thank you very much, and I enjoy doing it, but not very visual for people in the square. So talking is something that I can do and I'm good at and I enjoy doing, and an hour's not very long at all.
So is that how you spend your time? Are you a full-time working artist?
No, I was for 12 years. I was self-employed for 12 years and kept the wolf from the door, but it was quite hard because some months you'd get lots of money and the next month you'd get nothing. So when I wanted a house, I got a proper job again, and I now just do this as a hobby. But I've won awards for my art. I've won the Hugo, which is the largest award in science fiction. And I have 2 huge silver rockets to say that I'm the best fan artist for that year, which is quite a feather to my cap. And I had my self-portrait hung in the National Portrait Gallery. And that was Channel 4. They wanted everybody in the country to draw their self-portrait. So I did. I drew me belly dancing. And I drew it at lunchtime in biro on a scrap of paper, and it was one of the 100 that out of the thousands they got that they put in their exhibition, and it toured the country and did the National Portrait Gallery. So not everybody can say they've had their picture hung in the National Portrait Gallery.
How did that feel?
Oh, that was fabulous, because any artist would kill to have a picture hung there. And it was literally just a 5-minute doodle. It was, and they liked it because it was a doodle and it said a lot about me. But as I say, it would have been nice to give an hour-long belly dancing lesson on the plinth, but not exactly practical. It was finding something that was practical. But, and most of the things I do just aren't suitable for doing on the plinth. I've done all sorts. I've done medieval reenactment, so dressing up as a lady of pleasure in a corset. I've done it for the English Civil War Society. I've done it for the Vikings. I see Trollope seems to be one of my historical things, but so I've done that in the past, and I've got all the costumes that go with doing that. I've been involved with all sorts of science fiction fandom. I've been involved with anime fandom. I've been involved with Phil King, which is science fiction folk music. I do sing, but I wasn't going to inflict that on you. I'm a doer rather than a, you know, rather than a just an absorber of things. I actually like to do things. I used to teach arts and crafts, so I can turn my hands to most crafts, because I used to have to for my little old ladies, because they used to sign up for 6-week courses with me, and I'd set them 6 weeks of stuff to do. And then at the end of it, in theory, I got new people, except the same ladies would all sign up again. So I'd have to find another 6 weeks worth of work to do with them. And then they'd sign up again. And so eventually I had most of them for 3 or 4 years, and you only got on one of my courses if one of them dropped out. But so I've done all sorts over the years, but usually artistic related. And even though I'm currently working in an office, I still, evenings and weekends, do arty things and enjoy doing them. I was doing tapestry on the train on the way down.
And is your art related to science fiction?
sort of. I mean, I do a lot of Green Men, and I when you're working full time, you do what pays. I got very sick of drawing dragons, which don't particularly interest me, but people like, and cats, which do interest me. But I do a lot of Green Men and goddesses, and they link in with my interest in paganism, and things like that. I work on wood, so a lot of my work's done with pyrography, which is burning designs on wood. It's very pretty. And I like working with wood. I like the feel of wood and the smell of wood, and just having wood around. My house is full of the stuff, and it's, you burn with a hot poker and you burn the designs on, so they're just in shades of brown on the wood, so they look really nice. But I sell stuff at science fiction conventions, because they, science fiction fans, like to have original art, and I've been doing that for, since about 1988. So that's quite a long time as well. When I think about things, I've been doing stuff like this for quite a long time.
And your involvement with all these science fiction events and conventions, how much time does that take up in your life?
It doesn't take that much time. It can do. It's much easier now that we have the internet. We just went to Montreal for the Worldcon, a gang of 9 of us, and we arranged it all online. And we did their newsletter for them, and we did all that sitting around the table at we almost could have done the entire newsletter for a 5,000 person convention, sitting 3 miles away in our apartment with the Macs doing it remotely. It was just that it had to have news in it, therefore we had to go to the convention and get news. But science fiction fandom is, it's, don't actually be fooled by the science fiction. And we would go to a 4-star hotel with real ale and a 24-hour bar, and we sit around and we talk and we drink beer or orange juice and we socialise. And what we have in common is our love of books and reading and thinking. But what we actually talk about is the husband, the cats, the TV, the computer. You know what I mean? I'm sure the budgie fanciers don't spend their groups sitting together talking just about budgies. They talk about other things, and we're the same. We're a social group that like thinking about the way people interact with their world and thinking about how they'll interact with it in the future. And we get together and we run conventions so that we can get together. And as I said, technology, it's quite interesting looking at things like, if you read all the SF from the 50s and 40s and 60s, they didn't predict the PC in the way that we use it today, and mobile phones and texting. And these are people whose job was to write speculative fiction about the future, and they missed, because the future isn't what we think it's going to be. And that's very interesting, and that's what we're into, trying to figure out what the future is going to be.
I was just going to ask, is that relevant today then? Do you think about what things will be like?
Because I've been involved with science fiction fandom for so long, I know lots of writers, because I knew most of them before they were writers. I knew them when they were just science fiction fans going to conventions. And then it's lovely to see somebody get their first book published. And then 10 years later, they're on their seventh or eighth or ninth book, and they're making a reasonable living out of it. But it's all about, it's not about rocket ships, it's all about people. You know, sometimes rocket ships can be a metaphor for other things, but that's not actually what it's about. If you scratch the surface, it's not really about that. It's about the human condition, in the same way all literature is. All literature is about people and how they interact with their environment. And science fiction is absolutely no different. It's just got trappings that people find fun. And the writers find quite liberating in that they can try and think of how people will be not constrained by today's morals or today's taboos. They can think about what this will be like in 3,000 years' time or 10 years' time. Because 10 years is just as far away as 3,000 years in human nature. You know, it can be if you want it to be.
Is it a misconception then to think of science fiction being about little green men and life
on the planet? I don't know. Some of the first science fiction that was written was people like H.G. Wells and Jules Verne, and they were about men on other planets. But you can trace it back further to, because it links back in with fantasy, and people have been writing fantasy for a very long time. I think it takes a certain level of technology before you can start writing science fiction, because that's the science part. Because remember, up till the Victorian age, most of us were rural, living in the countryside. You know, till the Industrial Revolution, there weren't the machines there to write stories about. So it's really just trappings of a larger theme, which is speculative fiction, which involves fantasy as well, if that makes sense. But it's very interesting. And the people that are in it, a lot of the people that are in fandom side are doers. We like to do. We don't tend to just sit in the audience. We're not passive consumers of a product. We like to interact with the writers. We like to interact with the artists. We like to interact with each other. The first convention I was involved with was 1988, and that was Follycon in Liverpool. And I remember at the end of each committee meeting, because a committee of people would run it, and they'd say, right, we'll organise the next committee meeting. When can everybody make it? And there'd be the thwap of people's filofaxes hitting the desks, as everybody got their filofax out and looked at it. And then gradually the filofax went away and got replaced by other things. And nowadays, it's not even as definite as that. Everybody gets their PDA out or gets their mobile phone out and checks their diary on that. Or they just do it remotely when they get home, and everybody just emails each other. So, you know, it's what we are living in the future. You know what I mean? It is changing all the time. The way we communicate changes. But human beings don't quite catch up. It takes a while for them to catch up with the fact their tech has changed and got that much more ahead. And my mother, bless her, is going to the library to watch me today. She's never even touched a computer before, so she's going to have to get the library to show her how to do it. But kids now, you know, they are living in what to us was, when I was growing up, was science fiction. You know, I'm 46. When I was at school, we didn't have a computer in the school, not in the office, let alone, you know, for the children. And I was taught to type on a manual typewriter, and it's the most useful thing school ever taught me, because I can touch type. But they didn't teach, you know, as I say, there was not a computer in the school. I left school in 1979 without ever seeing a computer. But that's only 1979. It's not very long ago. You know what I mean? We're not talking Victorian times. We're not talking the Yorkshireman sketch from Monty Python. You know, it's not that long ago. But things have changed that much in that short period of time. And that's the sort of thing that science fiction fans find interesting, and science fiction writers find interesting, and find fuels what they want to talk about.
And do you and your peers have ideas at the moment about what to expect in the future? Or?
I don't know. Every single one of them's a computer geek, it feels. And I know that isn't quite true, but it just feels like that. I mean, I went over to using a Mac because my tech support team, who were my friends, all went over to using Macs. The technology is only there to help us communicate better. As I say, those file of faxes where you physically had to have them and write it down are gone, except I actually still have mine somewhere. But, we've moved on to other things. The next thing they say is, well, we're not going to keep hard drives on our computers. It's all going to be on the cloud and on the internet. And then, of course, somebody points out what a fragile thing the internet is, because we tend to take it all for granted, and it would only take a quick power cut to knock us all offline, or a server somewhere going down, as I think it was somewhere in Africa recently, or the Middle East, a server went down, and, no, beg your pardon, it was a cable underwater, got damaged, and cut off East Africa or somewhere like that. We take it all for granted and we think it's like magic, but it is actually still run on tech and sometimes quite old tech. Some of the phone lines are still actually quite old, and that's interesting. But it's all really about people.
Your hour on the clip today with your stories and your anecdotes, are they all personal?
Yes, and they're all true, sadly. I do have a cat that put me in hospital the first day I got it. My granddad was absolutely barking and wonderful, and took the kettle off my grandmother's stove and buried it in the garden to act as an earth for the radiogram during the war, and didn't tell her. And this was the kettle she used every day for making the tea. And he didn't tell her till the 60s when he dug it up again. I love, they're all stories about people, even the ones about cats. And I like talking, and I'm good at talking, and people like listening. And I've got ad breaks for various things that I believe in, and a couple of friends' books and a couple of charities that I believe in. There's one charity that provide lunches for children in, all across the world, but they can provide lunches in Malawi for children for a year for about £5.80. That's about what I paid for breakfast this morning at the cafe, and they could feed a child for a year, and it's a bit humbling when you hear statistics like this. So for all our technology and all our highfalutin ideas, we still haven't got the planet sorted to the point where people don't go hungry. Yeah, we're not as clever as we like to think we are. And just because we're all right, Jack, doesn't mean to say someone somewhere else isn't. And we were discussing earlier about the kerfuffle of people being naked on the plinth. And I say, they're human bodies, and as long as they're not doing anything sexual, just being naked isn't sexual to me. Whereas to me, finding out that kids can be fed for an entire year for £5, £6 is much more newsworthy than somebody taking their kit off and standing in a windy Trafalgar Square midweek. And I think sometimes that all of us have our priorities a bit wrong, and get embedded in the things that we do day to day, our work and our enjoyment and our families, and stop looking at the larger picture that might say, yeah, we're okay, but our neighbours aren't necessarily. How much do we have to sacrifice to actually help them out? And it turns out usually not very much. But people don't, they get bogged in with the argument they're having with their boss, or the aunt they had with their husband, or the problems of the kids at school or something. And we all get a bit blinkered and we only see our little patch. And I think sometimes it behooves us to actually look beyond that little patch and see that, actually there's more in the world than just me and my family. Yeah.
What's the impact that you would like to have by going up and doing this today?
If just one person gives to one of the three charities that I'll be pushing, I'll be happy. That'll have made it worthwhile. It just, because from one person it can spread to another person, to another person, to another. You know what I mean? It's if it gets one person to subscribe to one of them, then that I'll be happy.
Oh,
an opportunity to tell my stories without having to stop because somebody wants to come on in a fancy dress costume. I don't know. I think public art is always very interesting. I think people should be involved with art. I've been involved with art all my life. I used to teach ladies who'd been told at school that they couldn't draw, and that was probably 60, 70 years before, and they'd never picked up a pen ever since. And I think everybody can do something. Might not be formally art, might not be very good. That's not the point. to my mind, art is in of itself a value, whether it's good, whether you can make money out of it, that's by the by. The fact that you are doing something creative and hopefully sharing it with other people is in itself enriching. You know, you don't have to compare it to your neighbour's art and think, oh, they're better than I am. That actually isn't the point. The point is that you did something and you made something. And I think getting 2,400 people up there to do something is interesting, and I wanted to be part of it.
And who would you say that you're doing this for?
I don't know. I haven't thought about that. Probably me, because there's nobody else to do it for. It's like, you know, I'm not being sponsored. I'm not, you know, nobody's making any money out of this. It's just for the satisfaction of going up there and doing something and being part of something. Something that's bigger than just me.
And what are the things that are important to you in your life?
Being honest and looking beyond just me. I have problems with politicians and people who say who vote for them that go, I will be better off under whoever, because I want us to be better off, which is a very socialist thing to say, but I've always thought like that. And it's not really a political thing, it's more of a philosophy of us all being better, because I think if we're all better off, then it pays dividends. It means we're all better off. This isn't about money, this is about everything. If everybody on the planet has enough to eat, then I think the whole planet is better off. Do you know what I mean? It's because it just strikes me that that's the right way for things to be. And I can only make a tiny difference, but if everybody makes a tiny difference, then it's a lot of tiny differences.
And what would your hopes and ambitions be then for the future?
I want to retire and move to Wales for the scenery and the beer. I don't really have ambitions. I've done lots, you know, so I'm quite happy with everything I've done. I'll still be creating art. I'll still be going to my belly dance classes. I'll still have strange cats that lead to amusing stories. And I'll still have friends, and I'll be able to contact those friends in new and different ways, and it will be even more interesting than it is now.
And how would you summarise or describe your experience of this project since hearing that you had it placed, this moment before going up? What has that journey been like?
It was panic at first, because I was in Montreal on a very flaky internet connection. So I was, and I didn't know if I could get the time off work, so I just said yes and crossed my fingers and hoped for the best. And then when I got back and it was like cleared with work, it was like yes even more. And then I started publicising it to my friends and posting on LiveJournal and posting on various other places and phoning people that don't have internet and saying you have to come and watch, or you have to try and watch online. So it's been fun. It's been fun and exciting. I don't know how many people are coming to watch me today, probably between 15 and 20, but I'm lucky with having friends that work down here. But yeah, it's been fun and it's been exciting.
Excellent. And we need to finish, really.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add before?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
That's all right. I was trying not to move my bangles because I'm aware of, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I forget they're there, and then suddenly you go, oh yeah, clatter.